Welcome to Federal Insights for February, sponsored by Anomaly.
To stay on top of cybersecurity controls, federal operators need to stay on top of the threats. The MITRE Corporation has developed a tool to help. It's called ATT&CK, a sort of open-source repository of threats. To better understand it, I spoke with MITRE's Chief Strategist for Cyber Threat Intelligence, Richard Struess.
ATT&CK is, the simplest way to describe it is an encyclopedia of information about cyber adversaries and their technical tradecraft, their tactics, techniques, and procedures that they use to get into systems and then stay on those systems and achieve their objectives.
That would be a pretty large volume.
And it's something that continues to grow and evolve as adversaries grow and evolve. And it originated out of a MITRE internal research project, and we used it to solve some of our own problems, and we saw that it really had great utility. And since then, since we publicly released it, it's a lot of other folks have decided that it's really valuable to have that kind of insight into what adversaries are doing.
So this is an online type of encyclopedia type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a website, attack.mitre.org, that has all this information. It's all freely and publicly available to anyone who wants to use it.
And what types of things can people find out in it?
So the real value of ATT&CK is that it takes this public information about adversary tradecraft and structures it in a way that makes it really easy to consume. We organize information really on two levels. One is, what are the adversaries trying to achieve technically? Are they trying to get into the system? Are they trying to move within your network? Are they trying to escalate privileges from a regular user to an administrator, and so on? And then under each of those tactics, as we call them, there are different techniques that represent the different ways adversaries have actually been publicly documented to achieve those techniques.
And how do you identify them? Do they have handles and identifiers that characterize them?
The adversaries?
Yeah.
What we do is we do not, and MITRE, do attribution ourselves. What we do is rely on what public reporting has said in terms of the relationship of a given adversary or adversary groups to a particular technique. And then we do vetting and curating of that.
So in other words, you can identify, say, Hacker Viper, I'm just making up that name, that does certain types of software attacks in certain techniques trying to do XYZ on a given network. And you don't know what their motivation is or who they're working for. You just know that that's how Viper operates.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of stating it. Whereas other organizations and certainly the government talk in terms of attribution and the sort of strategic goals of an adversary group, ATT&CK is really focused on the kinds of things that network defenders can use. Understanding adversaries' technical objectives and the ways that specific adversary groups have been attributed to specific behaviors.
So it's really tactical defense information.
Absolutely. And that, I think, is really one of the reasons that ATT&CK has become so popular globally, not just with governments, but with private sector organizations, in that for the cyber threat analyst, for the security operations center manager, for the CISO, ATT&CK represents a practical, tangible thing that you can use on a daily basis.
And where does the information come from? Because there are many, many private sector organizations that purport to be the watchers and guardians of the internet, and they have their threat reports and maps and animated drawings of where the attacks are going and so forth. So what is the trusted source of information on this?
Well, that's where we rely on public reporting of threats. So, and all the things you just named are exactly the sources of information. And we work closely with a large group of organizations that contribute information that they've published into the ATT&CK framework. And so what that allows us to do is, with each encyclopedia entry in ATT&CK, you can go and click through to the references to the original source material of who claimed that, who reported this technique, who did the attribution to a particular adversary group. So it's, we say you can always check our homework. It's not, oh, trust us, this is a real thing. You can look to the reporting.
But the existence of this collection indicates or implies that no single organization knows everything that's going on in the internet.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And I think, again, that's the value. And sometimes you have different people who disagree about a particular about attribution to adversary groups. That's a very common thing. Our feeling is we want to provide the information in a structured format, in a regular format, to make it easy for cyber defenders to consume. And then they can make their own judgments about if they're going to trust vendor A versus reporter B.
I'm surprised the Homeland Security Department itself, and you hail from there, at least for a stint, doesn't do this as part of its operating mode in what used to be the NPPD, now called the CISA.
Well, I mean, it's a really complex ecosystem. And yeah, I used to be with the NCIC at DHS, and they certainly provide, you know, key set of information resources for their stakeholder community. What ATT&CK really represents is the best quality open source reporting that we can bring together in one place and make it easy for cyber defenders to access. And I think it's really complementary to the cyber threat intelligence products that folks like the NCIC or commercial organizations provide.
We're speaking with Richard Struess, Chief Strategist for Cyber Threat Intelligence at MITRE. And if one is a defender, a chief information security officer, or someone closer to the operational level of network defense, how would you use ATT&CK on a day-to-day basis?
I always say that ATT&CK, first and foremost, is a great way to communicate about threat. You know, we organize it, I've talked about this encyclopedia, and we present it as a matrix, which currently has about 223 different cells in this matrix. And it really turns out to be a great way to have a very concrete conversation. Like you color in a particular cell in the matrix and you can all point to it and say, what are we doing about that technique? What are we doing about that adversary behavior? So one of the things that we've found is that organizations use ATT&CK to help prioritize their defenses. And what I mean by that is there's lots of different threats and there's lots of different vulnerabilities and complex systems. And with ATT&CK, you can take your defenses and essentially assess them against this matrix and ask a very concrete question. How do we do against the first cell? How do we do against the second cell? How do we do, and so on and so forth? And you know, people will turn that into stoplight charts that say, you know, we're good on these areas and we have no visibility on these other areas. And so what that allows people to do is prioritize where they need to make changes or investments in their infrastructure.
And the process you describe of checking your defenses against the various vectors that might be represented by these threat sources, a lot of organizations at least say they're trying to automate all of that. Otherwise, their people will be overwhelmed. You can't hire enough SOC people to man every possible situation. So how does this tie into the idea of automating threat response?
Well, it's interesting. I think there certainly is a goal across the entire industry to try to automate the activities that are possible to automate. And we see a blending. Certainly, there are some of it that can be automated. There's enough concrete technical information in the ATT&CK framework for at least some of the techniques that you could automate your assessment. And others, frankly, require humans to take a look and skilled analysts to take a look and understand, is this something we can actually protect against? Or if we can't protect against it, can we detect it? If we can't detect it, can we at least mitigate against it?
Richard Struess is Chief Strategist for Cyber Threat Intelligence at the MITRE Corporation. In part two of the interview, Struess discusses threat intelligence sharing among federal agencies. We'll post the interview in its entirety at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Anomaly are the experts in threat detection and intelligence. Organizations rely on the Anomaly Threat Platform to detect threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Let the experts at Anomaly arm your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence and show you the hidden threats targeting your environment. Get started with expert insights from Anomaly. Subscribe to the weekly threat briefing and stay updated on the latest threats. Register free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.
One thing about cybersecurity, there's always something to learn, always new threats forming out there in the wild. That's why threat intelligence information sharing is more important than ever. I asked about the state of federal threat intelligence information sharing in part two of my interview with the chief strategist for cyber threat intelligence at the MITRE Corporation, Richard Struess.
I think that there's been a tremendous amount of progress made over the past few years in improving both the quality and the quantity of threat intelligence. I mean, one of the big advances, I think, has been moving away from unstructured threat information as the only thing that we exchange to a more structured environment where you actually have machine-to-machine sharing of regularly structured machine-processable information. And what that allows us to do is actually have machines do some of the triaging and vetting and an initial operation on cyber threat indicators, for example, instead of making analysts sort of sift through a mountain of information.
In some ways, it sounds analogous to software development, where a lot of it, of the integration and compiling, is done automatically or by machine, and yet you have developers talking to each other as kind of a sidebar channel of information, which is valuable, but not something that ends up in the final product.
Yeah, I always think about it in terms of you have really skilled analysts who are collaborating analyst to analyst, but they're essentially sitting on top of an automated ecosystem. That's sort of the place I'd love to see us go. That's part of our vision for where cybersecurity goes over the next few years, so that we're really making the best possible use of skilled analysts and their intuition and insights. But the day-to-day processing, the minute-by-minute processing of large volumes of information about malicious IPs or malware or domains that have been hijacked, that's the kind of stuff that more and more automated systems are able to process.
And again, looking across the federal panoply, do you find a difference in the level of sharing, say, within the intelligence community, within the Defense Department, within the civilian part of government? Is one sector better at it than the other?
Well, I think there are lots of differences, and some of them are the result of differing missions, differing capabilities, and differing resources. What I'd say is overall, I see an increase in the sharing over time. I see an increase in the ability to leverage automation where appropriate, and I see an increased appetite not only to process lower level threat intelligence, things like the malicious IP addresses and malware hashes, but now we're seeing a lot more interest in understanding adversary tradecraft and sharing the kinds of information that we see in attack.
And what about the problem or the barrier or the challenge, let's say, of something that might be happening in the classified that could also affect the unclassified world or the highly classified and the less classified? I mean, nothing in the government is open, but the idea of sharing what you are learning in a highly classified environment in a way that won't compromise it, but yet you can tell the unclassified environment, you better watch out for this also.
Yeah, there's been a lot of work in that over the years. And, when I was part of the government, I saw a shift from very little information going from classified to unclassified to a real concerted effort to, where possible, to tear line or take the parts of the threat intelligence that could be shared without revealing sources and methods and for the greatest possible impact. And that's really the key thing here. It's often possible to say, hey, this specific thing is bad, whether it's, again, an IP or a domain or a file, without necessarily revealing how the federal government learned that it was bad or that it's part of some larger campaign.
And how would you assess the tools and the development of the products and technologies that enable this kind of sharing? Are they up to the task, and what do they need to do to improve?
Well, I'm a little biased there because I've been part of the efforts over the last few years to create standards for the exchange of structured cyber threat intelligence.
This is all the sticks and taxi activity.
Which is something I started when I was at DHS back in 2012. And what we're seeing is increased number of vendors, really creating an ecosystem where you can now take cyber threat intelligence produced in one system, transmit it automatically to another set of systems from a different vendor, and have that all make sense and have analysts be able to use it.
Richard Struess is chief strategist for cyber threat intelligence at the MITRE Corporation. I'm Tom Temin.
Know your adversaries with Anomaly. Anomaly arms your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence, giving you visibility into hidden attacks targeting your network. Organizations rely on the Anomaly threat platform to detect cyber threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Knowledge is power. Stay up to date on the latest emerging threats with the Anomaly Weekly Threat Briefing. Subscribe free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.
We're speaking with Richard Struess, chief strategist for cyber threat intelligence at MITRE. And since I brought up STIX and TACSI, maybe tell us what those stand for and what they are.
Yes, so STIX and TACSI are two standards originally created by the Department of Homeland Security, and since 2015, now under the governance of OASIS, which is a non-for-profit standards development organization. And they really represent standardized ways to represent, STIX is the data format, cyber threat intelligence, and then TACSI is a standard protocol for exchanging that information. And we have, over the last couple of years, been working on the next generation STIX and TACSI version 2, and we actually have that released, and we're revving it as we speak. But that really represents a complete rethinking of the approach we've taken, and we're seeing a lot of uptake in major security products and services, and we're seeing uptake in end-user organizations because everyone needs a better way of exchanging cyber threat intelligence more quickly, more accurately, and with sort of greater context.
And with more agencies and organizations using cloud providers, especially in the hybrid environment, how can they understand what's happening in the cloud-to-cloud exchanges, which they're not strictly party to, only cloud to agency, but nevertheless, they could be affected by what happens among the cloud. How does that all play?
Yeah, so cloud security is actually one of the areas that we have seen a lot of interest in on the attack side, that people are interested in how we can take the approach we've used for enterprise networks, you know, Windows, Linux, and Mac, for the attack matrix, and how we can apply that for cloud infrastructure, for platform as a service, for infrastructure as a service. And I would say that's a work in progress, because there are a lot of challenges when you don't own and control all the infrastructure.
And so where is this all heading? How should it look in a couple of years, this idea of information exchange based on real knowledge of threats and threat intelligence?
So you're going to hear us talking a lot more about something called threat-informed defense, which is this sort of systematic application of an understanding of adversaries' technical tradecraft to help improve cyber defenses. And what I think we're going to see over the next couple of years is a two-pronged approach to try to get as many different organizations protected with basic cyber threat intelligence, the sort of cyber threat indicators through automation, and then the organizations that have the resources and capability to start really using things like the attack framework to better prioritize and tune their defenses against the evolving threat.
And a final question, you've used the word tradecraft, and maybe define that a little more carefully in the cyber context. We've heard that word a lot in the way the Russians say, for example, operate, they'll arrest our poor hapless guy because they want us to release their really bad spy. That's their tradecraft, I've heard. What about tradecraft in this context?
Yeah, so in this context, we're really talking about cyber adversaries' technical tradecraft. So what are the tactics, techniques, and procedures that they use? to gain their to gain access to systems and then to achieve their objectives. And each of those elements of tradecraft can give us clues about adversaries' capabilities. It might even, in some cases, help us differentiate between one particular adversary group and a different adversary group. But it's really a similar concept.
And the adversaries are pretty smart, aren't they?
We always work on the assumption that adversaries are the kind of adversaries that we're focused on in attack are motivated, well-resourced, sophisticated. The unfortunate reality, though, is with the proliferation of open source tools for adversaries that they share, you don't have to be brilliant to be successful at attacking a lot of systems. So one of our challenges and one of our goals is, as we work to try to solve problems for a safer world, is to try to raise that bar so that just a script kiddie sitting in someone's basement can't have the same impact as a nation state adversary.
And in general, the adversaries that you follow and that are in the MITRE attack framework, are they mostly motivated by financial gain or by national security types of interests?
Traditionally, we've been focused on, for lack of a better term, APT threat actors, advanced persistent threat actors, which tend to be nation state or nation state financed. But as the user base of attack grows, and it's been widely adopted in different sectors, including the financial community, we're working to try to expand those to that list of adversaries to the kinds of adversaries that are primarily interested in financial gain. But at the end of the day, if an adversary can get into a network and achieve their objective, and adversary A does it for financial gain, the reality is that adversary B, who might have other motives, is probably, you know, able to do the same thing. So we need to be able to protect against all of it.
Richard Struce is Chief Strategist for Cyber Threat Intelligence at the MITRE Corporation. There's much more to the interview. Hear it in its entirety at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Insights. Subscribe to the Federal Drive at Apple Podcasts or Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for February, sponsored by Anomaly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Know your adversaries with Anomaly. Anomaly arms your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence, giving you visibility into hidden attacks targeting your network. Organizations rely on the Anomaly threat platform to detect cyber threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Knowledge is power. Stay up to date on the latest emerging threats with the Anomaly Weekly Threat Briefing. Subscribe free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened. Anomaly are the experts in threat detection and intelligence. Organizations rely on the Anomaly threat platform to detect threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Let the experts at Anomaly arm your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence and show you the hidden threats targeting your environment. Get started with expert insights from Anomaly. Subscribe to the weekly threat briefing and stay updated on the latest threats. Register free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.